G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, the podcast that's all about intermittent fasting. I'm your host, Graham Curry from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilograms or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss. I'm also the author of the Amazon category best-selling book, The Fasting Highway, which will give you a great insight into what it's actually like to live it day to day, how to get started, what it's about, what are some of the health benefits that come from it, and how to turn it into a successful long-term lifestyle. In this series of podcasts, you'll be hearing from people from all over the world, from the beginners to the experienced and those that are on the journey. You'll also be hearing from some leaders in the intermittent fasting community, and you'll also be hearing from some past guests as we recheck in to see how they've been going. And thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, thanks to those that have been booking in with me for the private one-on-one coaching. It's been very uplifting and it's been so great to help so many people in such a short space of time. If you do want to get some one-on-one coaching and some advice from me, you're just struggling a bit, or you might want to get going, or you might have a few issues in maintenance, come and have a chat to me. You can do that in private by going to the website www.thefastinghighway.com, click on coaching, get help, and book a time with me. All times you see will be in your local time zone and a relevant charge is there. That's www.thefastinghighway.com to book in for the private one-on-one coaching with me. Okay, folks, let's get on with today's podcast. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast. And this is episode 157. And just before we get started with today's guest, as usual, I just wanted to give a big shout out to everybody out there that's been listening to the podcast. Thank you so much. Also to the members of the Fasting Highway Facebook community. And I just want hope that everybody's had a fantastic start to the new year and you're resetting yourself and searching for those health goals for 2023. I wish you all the best. Also, folks, if you are interested in my story, The Fasting Highway book, a couple of questions coming around that. You can get it on Amazon in both paperback and Kindle. Or if you're in Australia or New Zealand, you can find that at my website, www.thefastinghighway.com. Okay, let's get on to today's guest, and I'm delighted to welcome back again, Belle Swartz. And Belle was on a very early episode of the podcast, and she's 57 years old and just lives outside Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in the United States. And she's been married to her husband for 25 years and has a 22-year-old son, a 20-year-old daughter, and a pit bull named Louie. And she works remotely full-time for a home care agency in New York City, where she is a client account manager. And she has a part-time job on the weekends at a woman's clothing boutique that she does for fun. And she also has a love for dogs and volunteers for dog rescue in her free time. And Belle is a typical of a person and came to intermittent fasting looking for some health benefits and stayed around. And she's been doing this now for some 5 years. And she's going to impart some words of wisdom around that and why it's not just all about weight loss. So here she is to tell her amazing story is Belle Swartz. Oh, g'day, Belle, and welcome to the Fasting Highway. And thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Graham. How are you?
Oh, I'm really great. It's fantastic to have you back, Belle. And you're on the podcast some time ago, of course, and you're one of our first half a dozen or so guests. And you've been a long-term member of the Fasting Highway podcast, and you're just coming up to your 5 years, as we heard there in the bio. And I know that you've got a lot of experience to share. So what we'll do, Belle, if you don't mind, we might start back with a backstory and a recap of your 5 years of fasting. And a reminder of your why that you did start and when you actually found out about IF and where you are now.
I feel like it was almost a lifetime ago at this point. But so I started, I'm almost 57. I started when I was almost 52. So I started when I was 51. And at that time, I felt like I was kind of on my own more with fasting. It's become a lot more popular since then. But it's still not, you know, as well known as it seems to us, probably in our community. It took me about, I'd say, under a year to lose the weight I wanted to lose. And basically, I've been maintaining ever since. So it's been about 4 years of maintenance within probably a 2 to 3 pound range. That's pretty much my backstory. But I spoke to you right after COVID. And I know that a lot of people had a hard time during COVID. I managed to make it through and maintain during that, and basically have been maintaining ever since. So doing IF.
That's great. So, Belle, if you don't mind, just for people out there that may not know a lot about you, maybe just share a bit of your stats and where you were with your weight, and just give us the reasons why you stuck with IF all these years.
Well, as many women, you know, in their late 40s, early 50s, experience perimenopause and, you know, going into menopause, and I was having my weight was actually a lot more stubborn than it had ever been in my life. And it just became harder and harder for me to drop like basically the last 5 pounds, but it was always the last 5 pounds for me. So I just gave it a try, and it just became a lifestyle for me because the weight came off like very easily for me. And I think that my body just needed a change and something to shake up my system, I guess you could say. At this point in my life, it's just part of my lifestyle. I couldn't ever eat 3 meals a day again. I just have to listen to my body too much now, where in the beginning, before I started fasting, it was more like, you know, eat breakfast, lunch, dinner. But it's just become part of my lifestyle now.
Yeah, you just wake up in the morning, it's just something you do. It's probably not something you even think about. You go about your business. And let's talk about your fasting protocol, Belle, from when you first started 5 years ago. What you started off when you're losing that bit of weight that you had to lose there, and also where are you now? And have you changed your protocols much over the years? And what protocol have you found suited you best?
So when I first started fasting, I didn't really get into my stats too much. I mean, I'm 5'3", and I weighed about 130 at the time. My high was 130. I preferred to weigh around 120, and I did take off, you know, that weight pretty quickly. But when I first started, I started with the 16:8 window. It quickly became 17:7. But what happened was I was doing about a 9-to-4 schedule. So I was a morning eater. So I was always hungry for breakfast in the morning. So I would eat breakfast around 9. And then I would finish up all my food by about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And that worked really well for me. And I really wasn't hungry in the evening because I have more of an earlier eating window. Over the year, as I fasted, I became more just fat adapted. So my body started to be able to utilize its own fat for energy. And I started to I lost my appetite. I mean, I wasn't as hungry as I used to be when I first started. So gradually it just became too easy for me to do a 17 hour fast. And I just kept extending it, just listening to my body and eating when I became hungry, to the point where I say right now I average around 20 hours, 21 hours. I could go as low as 16, which I try to keep 16 as my minimum. And then I try to just go as long as I can until I'm really hungry. And another thing that happens when you're fasting is you do learn your true hunger signals. So I might think that I'm hungry at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning when I wake up, but I realize that I wasn't really hungry. I just have my cup of black coffee and I forget about food again. So when I am really hungry is when I eat, and that's when I kind of can't forget about food. It's just very pressing because I'm so hungry that I have to have something to satisfy my hunger.
Yeah. Have you tried any sort of extended fasting over the 5 years? Have you done anything like ADF or anything like that? Or really you're a person that likes to eat once a day and you're a nomad type of person?
Yeah, I have tried ADF. I fell into the trap of, first of all, I think it was easier in the beginning for me. I think maybe when I had a little bit more fat to play around with, it was easier. I think as I started to change my body composition and lose some of my fat stores, then it became a little harder for me to do it. That's my theory, because I had done quite a few of them when I first started fasting, but then as I became more of a veteran faster, I just basically cave usually. If I have all good intentions of, you know, maybe I had like a big eating weekend and I just want a day to just get back on track, and I end up waiting until later in the afternoon and just having something to eat, because it's just not worth it to me. I don't think that it really helps me personally with weight loss, because I have another type of mentality too, where the day after I would do an ADF, first of all, I don't really like the up day eating. I don't like the idea of having to eat two meals over a longer window. That's just doesn't come natural for me. I prefer to eat in a smaller window. Also, mentally, I think I do something that I shouldn't do, which is think about that I can have more calories the following day because I didn't eat the day before. So it's just really not great for me. But I will say that my body does regulate it, I think, naturally. So although I might not eat, I might not go a full day without fasting, and I don't purposely do a 500 calorie down day, but if I had a lot to eat the day before, the following day, I just don't need as much food. So I think that my body naturally does ADF on its own when it needs to.
Yeah. So you just become more of an intuitive faster. And I think that's for a lot of us that do this for a fair few years. You get in tune with your body's true hunger signals, don't you? And, you know, and for me, I like to eat once a day. I always have. I've never fasted right. Longer than 36 hours. It just doesn't appeal to me. And mm-hmm. Not because I don't think it's any good or I don't believe in the science, and I think it is a good thing for some people to do. But, yeah, for me personally, I just need to have that mindset like you. I want to eat once a day, and I don't want to think, go do that. And then the next day think, well, I didn't eat anything yesterday, right. So I can just eat whatever I want all day today. And then I find that really hard, because even if you were doing the 500-calorie update, then I would find that would be very difficult for me, because I just want to keep eating right throughout the day. Yeah. So where I'm just got to a pattern of where I'm just eating, I keep it simple. That's what I like about IF. It's simple. You know, I just eat after 5 o'clock in the day at some period of time.
Yeah.
I don't use apps. I don't use anything else. I don't have anything. I don't have alarms. I just know after 5 o'clock is some time where I eat till I'm full and satisfied. I get all the nutrients I require, and that's it. Then I go about my business the next day. But, well, just going back to when you discovered IF, when was the first time you heard about it, and what actually appealed to you about intermittent fasting in the first place?
I was listening to a lot of podcasts, and I listen to a lot of people that speak about just basically nutrition and health. And I just heard a lot of people speaking about how they were eating in this 8-hour window. At the time, I thought that was such a short time to eat. But now when I think about it, 8 hours is probably my longest window that I would have. But I don't know. I guess I just wanted to give it a try. It just was kind of something that sounded appealing to me. So I decided to give it a try, and I did join a Facebook group at the time. And I think the support in the Facebook group was really good for me at that time when I was just starting out, because I needed to ask a lot of questions, and I just wanted to kind of be able to reach out to people that were doing the same thing as me. I really wanted to try, just give it my all and stick to it. And I didn't want to give up too quickly. And then after I started seeing the results, then I guess I got hooked.
Yeah. Like a lot of us do. Once seeing is believing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're reading so much about other people's testaments and you're seeing their results as well, and it's important that we don't compare ourselves to others, because, you know, everybody's doing a different thing and we don't know what goes on behind the scenes and what people do. So that's why comparison is futile, because you don't know what those people are doing, what they're eating, how they're exercising. So there's no point in doing that. All you've got to do is be your own experiment of one. But let's talk about your eating window for a minute. Are you a person that sort of, when you first started, you were sort of eating what you craved, or have you always been quite a healthy sort of eater? And do you sort of eat in a calorie deficit now, or how do you sort of arrange your sort of eating window?
My eating habits didn't change drastically, but I will say that definitely regulate your hunger. So you're not, the appetite correction kicks in, so I don't overeat. I think maybe I eat less than I ate before, just because I think with fasting, you naturally just become attuned to your hunger and fullness signals, and they're exaggerated compared to when you're not fasting. So you really learn to understand what it is to be full and to not, or actually to be satisfied. So I think I've always eaten pretty healthy, but I probably eat less now than I did before, just because I just stop eating. I don't want to feel full. I don't like that feeling of feeling full. So I stop eating, and I don't worry about, I might get hungry later or nervous about that. So eat, you know, I don't eat for future hunger. So, which maybe I did in the beginning because I was worried I might get hungry later in the evening, but I just trust myself more now doing it for so long. It just gets easier and easier with time. So, but my window is, what I do is I kind of have a cheat day on the weekend. And I know that you say that, you know, weekends are a special occasion, and I agree with you with that, because they are. You have family celebrations, holidays, barbecues, you know. So I guess I'm more of like a 90-10 healthy eater. So I'd say 90% of the time I stick to, you know, good quality, clean, whole foods. And then if I go out to dinner on a Saturday night, and I want to have some bread and butter, or I want to have a dessert, and I want to have my wine, then I have it.
Yeah, so it's just having that balance, isn't it? And I think that's great. Yeah, I do say that about the weekends. For me, that's special because that's the time I get to see my family. That's the time I get to hang out with my wife and go down and have a brunch. Now I'm in maintenance, so I do TMAD or two meals a day on the weekends. And for me, that's important because one of the things I really missed when I first started intermittent fasting was the social side of things, like catching up with colleagues for breakfast or, you know, walking. I used to do a lot of walking. So if I was in a city, I was on holiday or something like that, or for work, and I'd walk past all these lovely cafes and see these people eating, I'd be thinking, man, I miss that, you know, and I miss that. That was the first thing that I noticed about intermittent fasting for me was I was known as a social guy. I was the life of the party. I was a party animal, to be truthful, back in those days. And then I went away from all of that. And that's what I did miss, is the interaction with people. And it always involved food and alcohol and whatever it may be. But then I sort of moved away from it. Now I don't miss it at all. That's the funny thing about it. But I do like that social interaction on the weekend. That's why weekends are special for me. I mean, people get married on weekends. Well, maybe these days they get married during the week as well. But, you know, and then you have family sporting events that you go and watch your kids play sport. And that's a really special thing. It's a special thing to sit down with a friend and have a chat about your week and, you know, what's been going on, all of that. So, yeah, it's important to have that balance, I think. And life is to be lived, Belle, and that's why we need to live this lifestyle like that. But, Belle, with the intermittent fasting, and then clean, healthy foods, I know, are an important thing to you. And you're famous over the years for your salad photos. Are amazing. I love them. And I've actually stolen a few of your ideas, to be truthful, and I've recreated them because they look so delicious in how you prepare them. And you're really big into the protein side of things, aren't you, with your food?
Yeah. I think everybody has to eat, you know, what makes them feel the best. And my body does better with a lot of protein. I'm not one of those people that has to work to get my protein in for the day. My protein grams, I can easily pack in 100, 120 grams in a day. And some people do better with carbs. And I really do, think it has to do with your individual makeup and your gut microbiome and your, you know, your just whatever suits you as far as what makes you feel best. But I know what makes me feel best, and I just try to stick to that. But a lot, mostly vegetables and protein and the healthy fats, like the avocado, I love. So I'm not perfect, but like I said, on the weekend, you know, I splurge a little bit, but during the week I try to stick to, I personally like to do low carb, not keto, but low carb.
Yeah, I'm the same. Yeah, I love that. I love your meals where you have a lot of, you know, things like salmon and chicken and salads and grilled chicken, because it's really important that we do find our own niche. And we're not here to judge anybody about what they eat, but it's really important to know that things aren't working for you. Well, sometimes you got to examine that. And we'll talk about that in a minute, Bell. But as we know, we heard in the intro, you'd like to bake as well. And I know that you really love to cook for your family and bake things. How do you find that over the years when you're fasting? Have you just got used to that if you're fasting at the time when you're baking for your family? I mean, how do you work that in for the bakers out there?
Okay, so my advice when to anyone who likes to bake is to do it when you're least tempted to eat it. So I don't eat first thing in the morning. And like I said, I do have an early window, but I just really don't develop an appetite until about 10 or 11 at the earliest. So I know I'm safe to bake early when I'm not tempted to do any licking or tasting. I'm happy with my black coffee. So, and then I don't know. I mean, if it's going to tempt you too much, I would say just don't do it because there's times when I know that I'm going to have a harder time resisting. So I just decide not to bake maybe if I don't think that I can stay away from it. Or if I want to treat myself to it, then I do, but I don't really like to eat cake and cookies and things like that during the week. So I don't torture myself that way. But, which is another suggestion I have for people that have a hard time staying away from sweets and sugar and flour and processed foods. I find it easiest just not to keep it in the house. So if it's not there, you can't eat it.
100%. 100%. And when I overcame my sugar addiction and I learned about sugar and I came out of the withdrawal process, anyone that's read my book knows that it was a pretty brutal thing for me those few weeks going through that. I mean, going from a chronic sugar addict to just stopping straight away. And one of the things while I was doing that is I did learn about what sugar was in food. And then we went through all the pantry, we went through the fridge, and anything we thought was super high in sugar. A lot of the stuff too that you didn't really think was high in sugar, but it was. Like I used to love tomato sauce, for instance, right? Tomato sauce, chock-a-full block of sugar. And then I thought, wow, I used to have that stuff on everything. There's my problem. And then once I started learning about it and then I got the stuff out of the pantry, it took us hours and hours, Bell. We were just like getting food out, reading it, and then going through it. And then we got to the point where we knew the foods that weren't serving me well and what my problem was. And then once we stopped buying them, and one of my tips was if you want to cut down sugar when you shop, is to shop around the perimeter of the supermarket or the big box stores, as you guys like to call them, because straight away you're taking so much sugar out of your weekly shop because you're shopping in the fresh food section, the fruit and veg, the dairy, the meat section around the outside, because it's in the aisles where all the packaged food and the processed sugars are. So that is a tip if you do want to cut down your sugar intake, is to start shopping like that. I know you have to go down there for cleaning products and all that sort of stuff, but if you can keep out of the aisles that are causing the damage, you'll really go home with a much healthier trolley. And it does stop at the checkout, really. And the accountability is with yourself. I mean, it took me a long time. It took me 55 years, Bell, to admit that I was a sugar addict and I was obese, morbidly obese, and I needed to do something about it. And I knew sugar and fast food were my problem. And I think it's when you admit those problems, that's when this all becomes easier. But, Bell, we talk about the health benefits. And, I mean, you're a classic for this because 5 years and you came to IF and 10 to 15 pounds on your body frame was quite a lot, you know, to lose that. And then that would have been making you feel uncomfortable. And now you've got that off and you've maintained it for all these years. So let's talk about that, the health benefits, the non-scale victories, those sorts of things that have come to you, aside from the weight loss. What have they been like for you?
First of all, I mean, basically the overall health benefits are, I feel very energetic. Like I don't, I'm very active. So I don't have a problem, you know, I walk usually about 3.5 to 4 miles a day. With my husband in the morning, we walk the dog. He holds the dog and I hold my weights. So I hold usually 12-pound dumbbells when I walk, or sometimes I'll take one 15-pound dumbbell, or if I really feel energetic, I'll take two 15-pound dumbbells. But so I guess, you know, just like the fact that I can do that kind of thing, I have the energy to play. I mean, I'm going to be 57, which I don't think is old anymore, but I just feel young. I feel, you know, like I have a lot of energy. I don't feel like I'm aging, I guess you could say. I play pickleball now, which I guess you announced in my intro, but that's a lot of fun. And I've been doing that with friends and with my husband too. And it's a great workout. Have you played at all?
I don't know even what pickleball is. Can you describe what pickleball is for us Australians and New Zealanders down here?
It's becoming really popular here in America, but they're changing all the tennis courts to pickleball courts. So it's basically, it's almost like oversized ping pong, I guess you could call it. It feels more like ping pong than tennis, but it's kind of a combination. But it has its own rules, and it's a really fun game, and you usually play with a partner. So you play basically doubles, and it's just a lot of fun. It's really catching on around here. So, but anyway, I feel really good. I feel energetic. I feel, and I also long-term health-wise, I feel like I don't worry about getting old and feeble. You know, I don't think of myself as one of those people that's going to be walking around with a cane when I get older. I feel like I'm going to still be going in my 80s, hopefully my 90s. My health is just generally good. I don't get sick. I mean, I just don't get sick. I mean, I hate to say it, knock on wood, but, and if I ever do get, you know, a sniffle, it's gone the next day. My blood work is generally good. I kind of did want to touch on the cholesterol issue because I know a lot of people have a problem with fasting and cholesterol. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, just tell us about that with the fasting and cholesterol, because a lot of people go for blood work and that sort of thing, and there's several theories about what you should do leading up to that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think fasting in general will spike up your cholesterol. But I've talked to my doctor about that, and she's fully on board. She understands the process and why that happens. It doesn't necessarily mean you have a bad problem. It just means that the fasting process might be causing that. So just tell us your theory on that.
Well, I mean, I know a lot of people, you know, they'll post something on Facebook and basically say, I'm going for blood work. What should I do? And if you go on Dr. Fung's Facebook page in the pin post, there is something about going for blood work and the protocol that you should follow before you go for blood work. And it's basically don't fast more than 12 hours because it will skew your results of your LDL cholesterol. And I personally don't really have anyone to... don't have anything. I feel like I don't have anything to prove. So I'm not going to go in and fake my lifestyle for a blood test and just to manipulate the LDL to try to get it lower. If, you know, it is what it is. And I think that basically, I mean, if you listen to a lot of people that talk about cholesterol, like Dave Feldman, I don't know if you've heard of him.
Yeah.
He talks about, they talk about basically your HDL and your triglycerides being more important than your LDL. And so I basically just try to go by those numbers. So I have, you know, a higher HDL and a very low triglyceride, and my LDL is going to be high, and it's because of my diet, and it's because of, you know, it's because of fasting, and it is what it is. So.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's important to discuss that with your doctor too, and try to stay away from, you know, Facebook Medical School and Dr. Google, because that conversation you have with your doctor generally is, okay, well, I'm an intermittent faster. I'm a long-term faster. These sorts of things happen when we're fasting. Yeah. Here's some research on it, and they can go and look at it. That's what my doctor did. And she came back and she said, well, yeah, you're right. because the first thing some people want to do when they see your cholesterol shoot up is put you on things like statins and that sort of thing. And you just go, no, I'm not doing that. And then, you know, I'll see what I can do in terms of my diet. But really, it might not be related to your diet if you're fasting. It's just a simple fact of your fasting. But it is something that's really important to take your advice from your doctor and not Facebook or Google and then be guided by them. And if you don't like that advice, then go and get a second opinion. Yeah. Or if you're worried about it, you can also get scans that will show you whether you've got arteries clogged up or any of that sort of thing. So it's important to get the right advice from the right people when you're talking about that sort of stuff. But also, Belle, I mean, you know, clean fasting is something that's very special with the intermittent fasting lifestyle. Yeah. Was that something you got the message from right from the very start 5 years ago?
I was a stickler from the beginning. I'm a rule follower. So I really did try to really white knuckle it in the beginning until with just what I was allowed to have. I will say I was doing a lot more of the pink Himalayan salt in the beginning. So that was a crutch I was using. I mean, it's not breaking your fast. I don't think it is. But it's just a nutrient, I guess you could say, a micronutrient. So a lot of people use that just to help them, like they suck on a piece of salt. But I don't have to do that anymore because I'm just so much more used to it now. But I'm really not sure if I could really, you know, say one way or the other about having a non-clean fast and whether or not it was worse for me or better. I mean, maybe I've popped a piece of sugar-free gum in during a fast. For me, it didn't. It was mostly just to freshen my breath, and it didn't make me hungrier. But, you know, I don't know if that's a great example.
No, probably not, Belle, but
I hear people say that, you know, the fasting's not working for them. And then in the next breath, they're saying that they're putting cream in their coffee in the morning. And it's just hurting them in two ways, which is one, it's breaking their fast just in general. So they're losing the benefits of the autophagy. Even though it might be heavy cream, it's still breaking your fast. And then number two, it could possibly make people more hungry, so that they can't keep their fast as long.
Yeah, look, there's no question about it. I mean, you're about the 150th person I've interviewed on this podcast, Belle, and nearly every single one of the people that started off dirty fasting and then moved to clean fasting. And what we're talking about here for people that may be new to intermittent fasting, the clean fast is very important with an intermittent fasting lifestyle. So during our fasting period, what we're talking about there is just having things like plain black coffee, plain black tea, plain water, plain sparkling water, plain green tea. That's basically it, right? So anything else that you're doing that's got anything like calories in it, like the heavy whipping cream that Belle just talked about then, things like, you know, sodas, because even though they've got no, real sugar, but they've got a ton of artificial sugars, what they'll do is they'll make you hungrier. So that fasting window will become really difficult and you'll start white knuckling. And then when you get to your eating window, you'll overeat, you'll start binging because you're so hungry. And that comes from those things that you're doing during your fasting period. So it's really important to keep that clean fast because that's where the magic's going to happen. It's giving our organs a rest from digestion. It's letting the autophagy sort of process work, where we're regenerating ourselves. And speaking of that, Belle, just to rewind back to your exercise, I mean, this, you're a 5'3" person. You're walking around with two 15-pound dumbbells over 3 or 4 miles. That's pretty amazing. I mean, I've got to know you quite a bit over the years through the fasting groups, and I've seen a lot of your posts and your photos, and you mentioned there that you're a 57-year-old woman, and if dare I say it, you do not look 57. You look like a woman in her early 40s. And when I looked at your before and after photo that you sent me, you can really see that toning process in your sort of your structure and that sort of thing, and you can see that sort of muscle really, really showing out there that compared to your before shot. So that sort of autophagy that we sort of talked about, do you think that the fasting over those years has helped you with that as well, combined with that exercise?
I would say absolutely yes, because I exercised since 2007 on a daily basis, and I didn't start fasting till 2017. So I saw huge changes in my body, and I do chalk it up to mostly to the fasting. I mean, I granted, I do, you know, I do some dumbbell weights, but I don't do anything heavy in the gym. And my body changed a lot over the years since I started fasting. It kind of just changed shape. And I really do think it's from just losing body fat, I guess you could say. My body just has been eating its fat over the years. I mean, I still have plenty on there, but, you know, I have heard from doctors here and there, and they say, what is your body fat? A doctor asked me recently, I said, I think it's about a 18 or something. And he's like, I thought it was a 10. I'm like, no, not that low, but it depends on which part of my body, I guess, but I don't really carry it in my stomach. So I guess I'm lucky that way, but I have it other places. But the fasting, I think, really does help with body week. I mean, you can look at other people in our Facebook group, and I don't have to mention any names, but it's got to be more than just working out. I mean, you've seen the results.
Oh, it's fasting really helps with the toning process over the years after you lose a lot of weight as well. Because one of the things people have when they lose a lot of weight is a lot of loose skin issues. Mm-hmm. And for me, I was lucky. I didn't have that because I'm a 6'5" tall guy. And I think the taller you are, the more you'll get away with that. Well, I still had some under my arms and that sort of thing. But what I've noticed is over the last 3 or 4 years since I've been in the maintenance sort of phase, or what I like to call vigilance without obsession, is that my natural toning process seems to be working. I mean, I'm coming up 60, and when I was having a shower the other day, I looked in the mirror and I was looking at my stomach and I thought, holy moly, I can actually start seeing abs coming through. And I thought, I've never had abs in my whole life.
Six-pack?
Yeah, never. Well, might be what we call an 18-pack down here, but it's not quite a six-pack, but they're actually visible. And I thought to myself, that's crazy. I never thought in my life. And then the funny thing was, when I was in the shower, I was looking at my feet and I was thinking, I never saw my feet for about 30 years when I was in the shower because my stomach was so big. And then I remember that first day that when I saw my feet, it was such a joy. And it was one of the best non-scale victories of all time because you realized, hey, I can see my feet. I mean, for a person that was huge like me, that was a pretty big thing. But, Belle, I mean, let's talk about some of the structural problems around intermittent fasting. I mean, you're deeply experienced at this. You've read a lot about it. You understand it. And we see people in the groups often say that they're struggling with IF. Where are the sort of issues or the areas that you see that people struggle with, and how could they sort of overcome some of these things by looking into it?
Well, as we touched on, you know, basically they need to look at what they're eating and how much they're eating. But I would recommend, if they feel like they're overeating, they might be, and they might not lose weight in the beginning because of that, because they might be opening up their window and famished and eating way more than they should, probably not even realizing how much they're eating. And then it's too late by the time they feel stuffed and they've already kind of definitely not eaten in a deficit, let alone probably eaten an overage. But all that's going to naturally go away if they just stick to it. So it's not, they should probably have, be cognizant of what they're eating. And some ways to do that are to open up your window with mostly high fiber, maybe vegetables, or, you know, just the healthier foods. And then if they want to have any of the other stuff, to save it for the end of their eating window, where they're really not as hungry at that point, so they might not overeat on the unhealthier foods. But as you've heard a lot of people say, and I agree, that you're really going to lose your desire to eat those unhealthy foods once you become used to intermittent fasting. And if you really have to stick it out and give it time. But you're not gonna take off weight though in the beginning if you're consuming way over your calories that you're burning, and also if you're consuming unhealthy processed sugar laden, flour laden, oil, you know, seed oil laden foods. So
Yeah.
It's not a diet, but I guess you have to use common sense. You know what's making you not lose weight. So you kind of just have to maybe even do what I do, which is allow yourself treats maybe once a week, but not every single day. And try and think of other things that you enjoy to eat in your window that might be healthier and you won't feel deprived. Like roasted vegetables are delicious. Stewed fruit is delicious. All kinds of fruit is delicious. You can eat all that and still probably lose weight. You don't have to eat the ice cream and the cake and the donuts and the chips.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. And I think too many people get hooked up on that mantra, you can eat whatever you want with intermittent fasting. And they've taken it the wrong way, Belle. They've taken it as an open license. The problem with that is eating whatever I wanted made me as an obese person as what I was, okay? Eating what makes me feel my greatest and helps my body run to its optimum has helped me get 132 pounds off and maintain that now for over 3.5 years. By doing that, just that one simple thing, eating what makes me feel my greatest, changed the game. Eating whatever I wanted made me an obese person. And whether you're an intermittent faster or not, because a lot of people say, well, the reason I do intermittent fasting is because I can eat whatever I want. But I can tell you, 8 out of 10 people will not get the results they want by eating whatever they want.
Yeah.
And, you know, just going crazy in their window. You have to have some common sense, even with intermittent fasting. And I think that's important. And even that person that coined that phrase, eat whatever you want, delayed things to get to their goals. And sometimes you need to do that. And you have to be able to do that, don't you, Belle?
Yeah. And, you know, like you mentioned, you had a problem with sugar. And I think when some people complain, oh, I'd be so great if I just didn't eat the sugar. Well, I just want to say, well, then don't eat the sugar. Because the only way you're going to not want the sugar anymore is if you stop eating the sugar. So it's a catch-22, but unfortunately, it works that way for most people, I would say. I mean, you've heard, you know, some people are abstainers, some people are moderators. A lot of people can't moderate sugar. So the only way to really not want it anymore is to just stop eating it. And it's almost like a drug where, you know, you have to go off of it for 3 days before you can start to feel like you could get clean from a drug. Or I'm not sure the statistics, but same with sugar. You have to basically stay off of it for a few days to realize you really don't need it as much as you thought you did. And your body stops asking you for it. And then there's also some, you know, some foods that even it might not be sugar, but it might be something that you're going to overeat on and you need to be cognizant of that. So, you know, if you're sitting there with a bag of nuts, even though they're healthy and you know that you can't stop eating them once you start, then maybe you shouldn't eat nuts for a while, you know? So, things like that.
Yeah, it's just basic common sense, isn't it? I mean, you're a person that knows that sugar and flour doesn't serve you well. And so you try to moderate that, as you say, and you have it on the weekends when you have your social events and that sort of thing. And I think even me being a chronic sugar addict, the way I got around it was just to cut it cold turkey straight off.
Mm-hmm.
And then the biggest thing was learning about sugar. I mean, you can pick up a packaged food, and we know that there's over 70 different names for sugar. So it's learning what those names are. And then one glance at the nutrition packet now, it might say on the front, this product is 99% sugar-free. But what they're not telling you is that they added in the false sugar and they put all these fancy names in there and they're tricking people by letting them know this is 99%, you know, natural sugar or whatever it may be, highly processed sugar. But then it's all the additives that are in there. So that's what we got to be careful of when it comes to food. We need to know our enemy when it comes to food. And if you've got a problem with sugar, know thy enemy and learn all those other names and then start going through a supermarket. I spent 3 hours in a supermarket one day just reading nutrition labels till I got to the point where I could see all these names just jump out at me. And I thought, right, they're hiding all that sugar in there. I'm not going to eat that. And that's just how it was. And that's how I got out of that habit. But I always say to people, if you've got a real problem with sugar, then deal with it before you go to intermittent fasting. Because if you take it into intermittent fasting, even in a 1 hour or 2 hour eating window, and you've still got a sugar addiction problem, you could cause yourself a lot of damage. What I will say is what it will help with intermittent fasting, and what it did for me was it made me learn about moderation. And moderation was something I just simply didn't have, Belle, right? But nowadays, I'm able to have a little bit now and again, but I don't have a lot of it because I don't like the taste of it. It's just like fast food. I don't eat fast food now because I simply don't like the taste of it. I just can't stand it. And so I haven't had it for 3.5 years. And people look at me like I'm a weirdo and say, right, you haven't been through a drive-thru in 3.5 years? And I say, no, I used to go in them 3 times a day for 30 years. Why would I miss that? And I know what it did to me. So, yeah, you just got to learn about what's in food, really, Belle. And I think that's really helpful, isn't it?
And I think also your taste buds change as well. So things that maybe don't taste that sweet to other people taste ultra sweet to you, you know, when you aren't eating sugar as much. My kids always make fun of me because I say everything's too sweet. And they don't think it tastes that sweet. And I don't like it because to me it's too sweet. So when I bake, I actually cut down a lot on the sugar, because I don't think it needs as much sugar as most recipes call for. And I think that when I do use the amount of sugar that it calls for, to me, it tastes too sweet. So I just don't like it as much.
When you bake, Belle, is it sometimes you bake that you use alternatives to sugar, or is there any sort of tricks there with your baking that you sort of can reduce sugar, or is there a process where you just generally have to use it?
I don't really try to do the substitutes for sugar when I bake. So I don't know. I guess it's like all or nothing with me. My husband definitely wouldn't eat it if it had an artificial sweetener in it. He doesn't like the taste of that at all. So he'd be out right away. And I don't know. I feel like if you're going to eat it in moderation, which not necessarily, you know, would just eat it occasionally, that it doesn't have to be artificial sweeteners, because I think people get into they fall into the trap too of thinking that they can eat as much as they want of a lot of these baked recipes that do call for a lot of the artificial sweeteners, and they can end up being just as triggering and just as calorie laden because you're eating too much of it. So I don't think that it's just a good habit to get into. To start, you know, they sell a lot of processed foods now that are, you know, keto, labeled keto on the label, but they're really not healthy for you.
No, it makes me laugh. Actually, I was on the Fabulous Keto podcast, and a big shout out to Jackie and Louise there at the Fabulous Keto podcast. It's a great podcast for anyone that hasn't listened to it, but we were talking about that, and the keto section at the supermarket here in Australia has become a big thing, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But when you go through the products and you have a look at them, they're just chock-a-block full of artificial sugars, and they're just not keto at all, but they're branded keto. Yeah. And I think it's only a matter of time before we have an intermittent fasting section in a supermarket where they'll catch on and they'll say, oh, these people are onto us. Let's brand these things. We've already seen it, aren't we? If you go on Amazon, you can see all sorts of crazy things they're saying people can have in their sort of eating window and fasting window. But, you know, and I've had these companies approach me to sponsor this podcast, and I've just said, no, you're not welcome on my podcast, because what you're telling people is a load of rubbish, and they're just trying to trick people and by cashing in on the intermittent fasting lifestyle sort of growth. But, you know, for me, you know, when you learn about food, as we were talking about before, everything becomes so much easier, Belle. And when I say to people, during your fasting time, if you feel like you need some distraction, well, do some research. Get online and type in different foods and have a look and see what's in them, and use that time wisely. But speaking of which, Belle, I mean, 5 years you've been doing this now. One of the questions I wanted to ask you was, is there anything at all you don't like about intermittent fasting?
Yeah, that no one else, not everyone else does it. That's pretty much it. I mean, my schedule, as you know, is a little not the norm. So you like to wait till 5 o'clock to eat, which is pretty much what society does, is eat dinner together. And, you know, because my window is earlier, I have to be flexible and adapt to other people's eating schedules to be social. So That's the only part that's a little tough for me. But besides that, I really feel good doing it. There's nothing else that I don't like about fasting.
Yeah, I'm the same, Belle. And there's not much I don't like about fasting either. I mean, as I say, in the early days, I missed the social aspect, but it wasn't a struggle for me in terms of, oh, I hate intermittent fasting because it's doing this to me, because I knew what I was doing was working towards a healthier me. So I was able to cope with that. So, you know, and I guess what are the top three things you absolutely love about intermittent fasting?
I think it gives you a lot of freedom, first of all, that you don't feel like you have to eat. You're not tied down to it being somewhere to eat a meal at a certain time. You don't have to pack snacks. You can kind of just do your thing. And you know that your body's just going to get you through whatever you're doing with a lot of energy, and that you'll eat whenever you can eat. It's convenient. And I guess just the natural energy that it gives you, the health benefits that it gives you. And I like the fact that you enjoy your food more when you eat, because you have a real appetite. It's not just like a fake hunger pang. You know, when you finally sit down to eat, you know, the food just tastes so much better now than it ever did before I fasted. And I feel like I enjoy it more. And I also like that I don't overeat anymore, because I think that's because of fasting too, because it just naturally leads to the appetite correction. So I don't have that uncomfortable feeling anymore when I finish eating, where I'm so stuffed, like on a Thanksgiving after, well, you don't have Thanksgiving, but I'm sure you've heard people gorge themselves. But that awful feeling that you get when you overeat, I don't think you do that after you start to become more in tune with your body, which I chalk up to fasting that helps you with that.
Yeah.
And
I agree with all of those, and I think they're fantastic. And it does, and I think it really helps you, doesn't it, appreciate food. For me, it was finding peace and calmness with food as well. And I've said before on this podcast, my sort of eating window is almost like a theatrical experience now, where I enjoy it, I savor it, it's mindful eating, it's deliberate, slow, and I just enjoy it. And I love putting stuff on the plate, presenting it well, like you do with your beautiful salads meals that you post and that sort of thing, just amazing. And I love that, and I love taking that time. And I think for me, I never used to taste food when I was obese, right? It was just volume to me. I never even knew what half of what food really tasted like. It was just volume. I was just chucking it in. But now I really enjoy it, and I've learnt all these alternative great foods out there, and I think that's what I really became, was a foodie. And I guess I have become a food snob, hands up, that's okay. And I think a lot of us do over the years. And as you said, you get in tune with your sort of hunger signals. And you just, it almost becomes automatic, doesn't it, Belle, when you're eating in your window and you get that feeling of satisfied and full, and that's when you stop. And I think that's when you know that you're settled into this journey, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I was just telling my husband the other day about the sigh. So I don't, does that happen with you? It's so true though, that you start to be aware of it, and when you sigh, that means you're basically like, you're finished eating. You've had enough. And it just comes more naturally. So.
Yeah, it does. And it almost becomes deafening, doesn't it? You know, you get to that point where it's just, you know, wow, that was great and fantastic. I'm done. And it's really important for experienced fasters like ourselves, Belle, and people out there listening that maybe just starting or thinking about it, is when you are eating in an eating window, whether it's 1 hour, 2 hours, 4 hours, 8 hours, it's really important to listen to that and to learn to eat till that's satisfied. And don't just think because your window's 1, 2, 4, 6, 8 hours that you eat for that whole time. You just got to eat to your body's hunger signals, and you've got to get used to that. So it's really important for people that have wider eating windows that when you get to that point, just stop. Don't think, I've got another 3 hours in my eating window, so I'm going to eat for another 3 hours. Because that's not going to work out very well for you in the finish if you pass that point, isn't it, Belle?
I mean, my recommendation, if someone does have an 8-hour eating window in the beginning, that they definitely, you know, if they want to do it a three meal during their 8 hours, that's up to them, or two. But the snacking in between meals, I just think is not a great idea. If you know, you don't have to do OMAD. I'm not, you know, not everybody wants to just eat one meal a day, but definitely, like you said, you don't want to eat during your whole entire open window. The whole purpose of having a longer window is that maybe you can get two meals in, but it doesn't have to be two meals and two snacks in between your two meals, or just eating continuously during, you know, the whole window.
Yeah, that's really great advice. And speaking of advice, Bell, I mean, you've got 5 years experience in this now. So you're sitting in a cafe there in Philadelphia, one of the great cities of the world, with a group of friends, and you're chatting about intermittent fasting, and they say, hey, Bell, we've been watching you over the years. You look fantastic. How do you do it? How do you get started? What sort of words of advice would you give people out there listening to this podcast? And like you, might not necessarily have a lot of weight to lose, and it's really important to get that message across to people. Intermittent fasting just isn't about weight loss. It doesn't matter whether you've got 10 pounds, 50 pounds, or 150 pounds to lose. It's all the same relevance, because what we're doing this for is to get healthier. So just give some people some tips and advice around how to get going.
Well, it's not a diet. And I think like one selling factor is that it's easier to fast than it is to go on a low calorie diet. So even though I'm talking a lot about refraining from cookies and cake and, you know, the processed foods, I didn't mention anything about limiting the amount of food that you eat. You don't want to overstuff yourself, but you definitely don't want to stop eating if you're still hungry. So I think that's a nice selling factor, is that you can just, I know somebody that's on a diet right now where they're doing, and she tried fasting before and gave it up for this diet. And it's one of those diets where they basically have the fuelings and the powders and the, and one meal a day. But I asked her what she was allowed to have as a snack if she got really hungry, and she told me she's allowed to have two pieces of celery. So wow. I just was like, wow, like who wants to live that way? I mean, I could eat a whole stalk of celery if I wanted to in this type of eating plan. So I guess what I would tell them is start with the minimum. And even if you have to start with 12 hours, fine, start with 12 hours. I mean, just don't eat till 10 o'clock at night and then wake up at 7 a.m. and eat again. So minimum isn't the greatest. 12 hours isn't going to give you all the benefits, but it's a starting point. And you have to just give it consistency and not give up right away. And I would also offer myself as support if they had any questions or were having a hard time with something. I would definitely recommend that they drink the black coffee in the morning. I had a problem with drinking black coffee at first. I thought it was bitter, and I know a lot of people complain about that too. Now I couldn't drink it any other way. I love my black coffee, and I know you still drink it with your cream during your window. Well, yeah, if it was morning here, I'd be drinking mine. But I actually really don't like it with anything in it anymore. I like it hot and black. So when I first started, I was trying all different things to take the bitterness out of it, including putting salt in the filter and, you know, trying all the tricks. But I enjoy it black now. And I think people do get used to it if you weren't used to it before. But yeah, I would just say, you know, try to keep yourself busy, keep yourself occupied. It might be hard the first couple of weeks, but once you make it through that beginning period and your body starts to become fat adapted, you're going to love it. So just, you have to give it a chance. You can't give up too quickly. It's not easy in the beginning. I was white knuckling it. I was hungry. I was trying really hard to get to 16 hours in the beginning. And now I do set a timer on my fast because I am curious to see where I am when I break it. but I usually look and I say, no wonder I'm so hungry, because I look at my timer and I say, I've been going 22 hours, you know, or, you know, on the weekend, if I'm running around doing errands and things like that, it could be 24 hours. And I just don't, 16 would be way too easy for me now, generally. So it's hard in the beginning, but just give yourself some time and give it a chance and give it a go and just try it. That's all I could say. I mean,
yeah, great advice. And I think it's all about picking your heart, isn't it, Bell? You know, I mean, being overweight and obese is hard. You know, maybe you think intermittent fasting is hard. Well, pick your heart. Which one's going to serve you the best? And that's what I always say to people. You know, you got to realize when you start. And great advice you gave there about giving it time. I always say to people, give it 6 to 12 months at least. Because we see a lot of people saying, hey, I've been doing this for 3 weeks and I've only lost 5 pounds. Well, yeah. Hey, well, 5 pounds in 3 weeks is pretty amazing. I mean, you times that by 10.
You wouldn't have lost.
Yeah,
and I mean, you do have to look at what you're eating and how much you're eating, and there are tweaks you can make, and that's why we do have the Facebook. You know, your group is great. I've made a lot of good friends on there over the years, and we support each other. And you have your moderators that are amazing, and you know, they're always there to offer their advice and their support. And so I would say, join a Facebook group if you need help or have some questions. And just don't give up and give it a chance. And you might be having some problems, but that's what the group's for, to just ask people for some help and some advice and some tweaks. There's lots of tweaks you can make. And I guess we didn't really get into that, but you know, if you're not finding the results that you want, then you have to look at basically what you're eating, and also, you know, how you're eating in your window. And also, if you set a 16-hour fast goal for yourself and you're not hungry after 16 hours, don't just eat because it's 16 hours. And it's not that rigid. You know, people think, beginner fasters, I feel like they think that you have to stick to an exact window. But I don't agree with that. I think that you should just really listen to your body. And when you need to eat, then eat. But don't eat before you're ready to eat. Stretch it out if you can.
Yeah, agree with that. It's just listening to your body. You're correct. And, you know, when you're first starting, there's a difference in hunger, isn't there? There's that head hunger where we mentally we think we're hungry. We walk past a bakery or we see some of our colleagues at work eating something and we think, oh, man, it triggers that response, I'm hungry. And you think, oh, I could chase a horse and eat the rider. And then you sort of have that sort of feeling where, you know, you might not be feeling so great. You're feeling a bit shaky, or you even could get a bit lightheaded. That's the time to really listen to your body and eat, because there's a big difference between that mental hunger and true hunger. And so that's what you've got to develop with an intermittent fasting lifestyle, is recognizing those two points of difference, isn't it, Bill?
And your body is used to eating a certain time. So you might still be getting hungry at a mealtime, and then it goes away in 5 minutes. So you have to just kind of give it a chance to let it pass. And also, I kind of wanted to touch on too, you know, with my earlier eating window, people think that they have to wait until 5 o'clock to eat. And not everybody's the same. So I enjoy eating from about 11 to 2 or 11 to 3. I don't want to starve myself until 5 o'clock. For me, that's too difficult. That's not what comes naturally to me. So I eat when my body is hungry, not when other people tell me I should wait until. And once I finish eating, I don't have to think about food for the rest of the day because I don't get hungry again. So for me, it's just easier to eat, enjoy my meal when I'm hungry, and then just go on with my day. So everyone doesn't have to think that they have to wait until dinner time to eat, because there's a lot of people out there that don't eat their meal at that time.
Yeah, you just got to move it around and be flexible. I mean, some people prefer to eat in the mornings, Some people prefer to eat in the middle of the day. Some people prefer to eat in the evening. So when you're working out your fasting protocol, work out which period of the day suits you best or where you feel best in your eating like you do. And I think that's important. It's not to be a stickler, because you need to sort of realize, which part of the day do I like eating the best? Do I like eating with my family and my partner in the evening? Or do I like eating in the morning and then getting on with my day like what you do or the middle of the day? So that's important. But, Belle, I cannot tell you, we're almost out of time, but it's been such a pleasure having you back here on the Fasting Highway. You're a shining light in this lifestyle for so many people in the groups. Thank you for your contribution in the Fasting Highway Facebook group. We really love having you there, and we love seeing your progress and everything else that you post, and it's just fantastic. So, Belle Swartz, thank you again for joining me here on the Fasting Highway.
Thanks, Graham, and thanks for everything you do too.
It's my pleasure. Take care, Belle. Bye.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Oh, that was so great, Belle. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed that chat with you, and I think you shared a lot of wisdom there in speaking from the voice of experience. It's really interesting how you've sort of progressed over that last 5 years, and that body recomposition is very real indeed. So thank you once again for coming back and sharing your story here on the Fasting Highway. Also, folks, as mentioned there, Belle is one of many inspiring members of the Fasting Highway Facebook community. Please come and join us there. If you're interested in my own story, you want to get some insights into what it's actually like to live an intermittent fasting lifestyle by someone that's done it and knows what it takes, then you can pick that up in my book, In the Fasting Highway. You'll find that on Amazon in both paperback or Kindle. If you are in Australia or New Zealand, you can order it direct from me at www.thefastinghighway.com. Okay, folks, until next week, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.